Hi and welcome to another Canny Conversations podcast, powered by the Pathway Group. My name's Mark Wakeley, and I'm one of the team who bring you these podcasts each week. In this series, Sarfraz Ali will be talking to some of the business people he's met and worked with in his 23 years at the heart of the West Midlands business community, and many of the businesses that are part of the Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance. In this episode, we're going to return to Sarfraz's conversation with Sharon Blyfield, OBE, Head of Early Careers at Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners Limited. In the second half of this fascinating chat, Saf talks to Sharon about her involvement in Scottish apprenticeships and her role in chairing a commission on race in apprenticeships. They also discuss the challenges faced by multicultural backgrounds in undertaking apprenticeships and the importance of industry partnerships. Sharon emphasises the need for collaboration in the skills sector and advocates for a fair wage as well as promoting social mobility. They also touch on the significance of vocational qualifications like BTECs and the initiative to widen participation in apprenticeships by removing entry barriers. So let's rejoin their conversation.
That way then you can have the frank conversation.
All right. Sharon, obviously doing research and trying to pick up questions that you may not have sort of covered before, maybe people may not be aware of you, because the whole idea of this podcast is that, particularly the long form content that we do, is that people get to know some of the things that they may not be aware of and fully understand in terms of some of the wide work that you do, as well as some of the deep work that you do as well. So one of the things I came across is that, you know, your association with Scotland. And, you know, you've been involved with Scottish Apprenticeship Week. You've done a lot of work with Scotland. And during my research, again, you know, came across, and I'll congratulate you in terms of picking up the agenda there. But I believe you're chairing the Committee for Race in Apprenticeships in Scotland as well. So quite a lot of work in the sort of Scottish Apprenticeship agenda, and also now with this new position as the chair.
Yeah. So Scotland's been a real challenge from day one because of the fact that it's a devolved nation. Their apprenticeship landscape is totally different in terms of how you undertake an apprenticeship. But they have the same challenges that we have in England from those from a multicultural background undertaking apprenticeships. So I have been asked, and therefore will be launching very shortly, the commission. So I've been asked to chair the commission on race in apprenticeships in Scotland, because one of the elements is that they really want to understand what's the barrier to those who come from a multicultural background undertaking apprenticeships. So right now, they're at 3.9% of their apprenticeships are undertaken by those from an ethnic minority background. But interestingly enough, when I asked what was the percentage of those from an ethnic minority background as a total in Scotland, it was only 4% back in 2011. So I did say to them, well, actually, that number is quite good. But of course, you know, we know that demographics change. But what they really do is want to be able to understand and therefore put in place actions that will help to increase the take up on apprenticeships. So I'm really proud and once again privileged to have been asked to chair that commission.
Yeah, thank you for that, Sharon. Much appreciate that. It wasn't something that I was aware of in terms of some of the Scottish numbers, because it doesn't come on our radar that much in terms of what's going up there and what the numbers are and what the diversity looks like and what apprenticeships look like and how they're funded. If you ask me any of that, I would say, I don't know. we just don't know. We're so insular in terms of apprenticeships in England that we talk about UK as a whole, but because of the, obviously, devolved nations, I just don't know what the funding landscape
looks like. It's been something that's been on my mind for quite a while, because one of the focuses for us is about, you know, those from a multicultural background and creating those apprenticeship opportunities. And I have struggled in Scotland, in all honesty, to not even employ, but just even to have the candidates coming through. So part of the reason for agreeing to chair the commission is that it'll help me to understand, for a CCEP perspective as well, are we trying to, you know, increase a percentage that isn't really there to be increased? Or do we have to target specific areas within Scotland and be able to say there's a larger demographic here, so this is where we should be targeting? So it also helps me and educates me as well to understand the demographics and also, more importantly, the whole funding within Scotland as well around apprenticeships.
Okay. I mean, again, it adds a different dimension to the work that you do, Sharon. And again, I would say most people in our sector probably have very little knowledge or understanding of what involves, and again, adds a, you know, another sort of bow to the arrow, as they say. Or, you know, so again, fantastic for that, and thank you for sharing. You know, you talk about targets and numbers, and I want to revert back, if I may, in terms of CCEP, in terms of, you know, are there sort of targets in place in terms of diversity? Are there any targets in place in terms of gender balance and so forth? And is that something you're aware of, the company as a whole? Are they conscious of that? And is there any sort of metrics that they're working towards?
So we have our corporate ambition.
Yeah.
And from that corporate ambition, I have then used that for early career. So our corporate ambition is that globally, 40% of females in senior manager roles and higher. For GB, we've said 50% of females. Yeah.
So just say that again. So globally is 40%.
Globally is 40%.
You've set yourself at 50%.
Correct. And so therefore, when I recruit and hire in for early careers, I go with the 50%.
50%.
Yeah. That is always our aim from a gender perspective. And then those from a multicultural background is 14%. 14%, which is quite low. But then again, this is when we start to look at the demographics, because London will clearly be significantly higher. But you might go to rural Scotland or rural Somerset and the numbers are lower. And that's one thing we always have to be mindful. But that's what I build the early careers approach on. And that's why the Scotland piece is a real passion for me, because of the fact that I want to be able to over-index to make sure then I maintain the target that we're looking at. But I hate the word target anyway, because fundamentally it should be about widening the participation and creating the opportunities for young people from underrepresented groups, regardless of whether it be gender, ethnicity, neurodiversity, to have an access into our organisation.
Thank you for that. Again, you know, it's good to sort of understand the sort of sometimes the metrics and how an organisation like yourself works. You know, whenever I'm thinking about yourself as an organisation, as an entity, CCEP, and I'm thinking, you know, our sector, because obviously you're fully embraced within the further education sector, but you're not really a further education provider as such. You're not in the FE space, but you talk FE, you live FE, you talk skills, you talk employability, but you're an employer. You're an employer brander. You're a very strong employer brander, which is quite unique, really, in some aspects of it. And if somebody said to me your name, I would say, yeah, you're one of us in terms of the FE sector. but you're also an employer. So how does that work? You know, how you found it?
I had to educate myself. Coming into the education sector, I had to educate myself. And I think that's where the work with AELP has definitely come in to this, because, you know, they are huge promoters and advocates for the education sector. And so by being part of their board, it's helped me to, well, one, it's opened doors for me so I can understand more about the sector. But also, if I am to be the subject matter expert for CCEP on early careers, I need to understand what's going on actually in the education world. And so this has created lots of opportunities for me to be able to talk about the sector from an employer's perspective and understand what's going on.
You know, there's a phrase that we keep hearing about employers being in the driving seat and employers, you know, taking a role, which is a bigger role. What's your take on this sort of phrase? It's a catchy phrase, though.
It's a very catchy phrase. You know, and that really came in with the apprenticeship levy. But I've always said employers want to have a seat at the table. They want to be in the heart of the discussion. They don't want to own it. Because, as you've just said, we're employers. We are not the education sector. So therefore, we're not the experts in there, but we know what we are looking for as an employer for the young people coming into our organisation. So we know what we're looking for. And therefore, we're there to help the education sector deliver that.
There's no doubt that CCEP, Coca-Cola, lead on that employer-led sort of rhetoric, agenda, the conversation. There's no doubt that, you know, you're a leader within that. You start thinking about employers who are in that space, there's no doubt your name is there, if not definitely within the top few that you think. There's no doubt in my mind anyway about that. What would you say in terms of two other employer brands out there? If you and I were talking and I was another employer representing XYZ company, what would you say to me in terms of, you know, this is something worth considering doing, getting involved with?
Yeah, so to other companies, I would definitely say, if you're going to be serious about early careers and wanting to shape what that future looks like, you're going to have to put yourself out there and invest the time and energy externally to be able to have an active voice, you know, around education. Or even just the apprenticeship landscape. You're going to have to be out there to have that active voice. And if you don't feel passionate enough about it, you're going to have to find somebody who is passionate, because then you'll actually be able to start to drive things forward. But you can't sit back and moan about, oh, well, you know, this isn't good enough, or I wish we could have that. You've got to be out there. So you've got to join the right networks as well. There are going to be many networks out there that say, come and join us. We have the voice of government. We have the voice of this. You've got to be very selective to ensure that you are, because you are also representing your brand as well within all of this, that you're doing it for the right reasons. Mm. But you cannot just simply sit back. You can't afford to.
Some may say, and I'm not saying it's me, but some may say it's okay for Coca-Cola because it's a, you know, everybody recognizes our brand. But we're a large employer, but nobody really knows us. We're not a household name. You know, we're not a recognized global brand. How do we go and do this work? It's a lot of work out there. What would you say to that, Sharon?
So it was really interesting. So if I think about the food and drink sector, there are a lot of brands out there that nobody will have ever heard of, but who they produce for, everybody will know who they are. And so therefore, it's about getting your voice into those networks. So, you know, we work with the National Skills Academy for Food and Drink, for example, that represents a lot of organizations within food and drink. They are a skills-based organization. So you could be part of that, because people may not know your brand, but actually if you're part of a consortium, then actually your power of your voice will also get you through that as well. And I know that there are many organizations who do have very, very powerful voices. Nobody just realizes who they are.
So if I may say again, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth in any way, shape or form, Sharon. If you were talking to a minister and you're talking to the powers that be, who keep talking about employers being the driving seat, employers leading on this, what would you say, you know, to them, that don't push that much pressure on us, don't push it all on us. It's about collaborative, it's about partnership, it's about people working to people's strengths or something else.
So I have been very vocal on this point.
Yeah.
I've been very vocal and I am not afraid to have that conversation with ministers, with shadow ministers, to say, again, you know, don't put all the emphasis on employers. It has got to be a collaboration, especially in the skills space, between employers, between training providers, between colleges. Don't put it all on the employer, because at the end of the day, the employer is just one element of a much bigger machine that is happening in the education and skills sector, and building the capabilities that we will need for future in the United Kingdom. So I've had that conversation with current minister, previous minister, and potentially future ministers around this. It's not fair.
Yeah, I know, I appreciate that. To be honest with you, I have picked up on some of your points before, and they're very well made and they're very well thought through as well. And absolutely, it is about partnership work. It's about, you know, really understanding the sector and the industry as a whole in terms of, you know, playing to people's strengths. So absolutely. One of the things, again, you know, you have spoke about before is pay scales and pay and so forth. And, you know, the fact that we've got to pay people the right sort of level of money, if you were going to recognise that. And sometimes the sort of guidelines that are set in terms of national minimum wage and apprenticeship wage and so forth aren't there. I think there has been some progress towards that and some betterment towards that, which is, again, I know you've spoken about that before, but that I think has been a positive thing. So that's a good thing, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely a good thing. In terms of, you know, one of the other things that, you know, you talk often about is social mobility per se in all its forms. And it's one of the areas that, again, you're quite well known for, being somebody who's, earlier we talked about doing a BTEC qualification yourself and going down that college route, you know, which again I did as well. I went down the BTEC vocational route. So something that we talk about, something that, you know, we sort of encourage others. So a little bit in terms of some of the conversations that you've been involved with, because there's been many of these causes that, you know, you've campaigned, you've been part of, and, you know, you see each of those things in their impact and value. So talk to us about some of these sort of initiatives that you've been involved with.
Yeah, so I am really pleased that they merged the apprenticeship wage with those sort of 16 to 18 year olds, because I remember the very first time I saw what an apprentice was expected to earn on an hourly rate, I think it was something like £3.40. And I thought, who on earth can live on £3.40? Nobody can actually afford to live on that, especially if you are from a lower socioeconomic background and you are trying to improve yourself. So I have really been very vocal on wages. And, you know, and as a CCEP, we have signed the Fair Wage Pledge and commitment, because, yes, I work for a very large organisation, so I am in a fortunate position that I can pay all of my apprentices, regardless of age, you know, above the national living wage. I can afford to do that. But even if you're a small organisation who can't give that level of salary, you should really be looking at what's the best possible salary you can give for an individual, because you will get more from that particular individual as well. This year, you know, and for the last few years, we have been working with Barnardo's. And in 2023, we brought some of their young people who are technically outside of that carer age to one of our events. And they spent 3 days with us, and we treated them exactly the same as we would treat any of our employees. But one of the other things that we did is we paid for, because there's always a very big evening celebration, so we bought them suits and dresses and all of everything that they would need to be able to attend the event and not feel any different from any of our other apprentices that were there. And that's really formed an even richer and deeper relationship, because you have to give back. If you've had that privilege to be able to work for a global brand like I have, then for me, it's always in the back of the mind. You should always then be paying it forward for somebody else.
So BTEC, you know, you did a BTEC in business and finance. I did a BTEC in business and finance. Proud to have that association. Unfortunately, the new sort of generations, they're going forward, they're not necessarily going to have the opportunity to do BTECs. And I know you've been fairly open about your views on this, and I just thought, if it's okay, just share with us in terms of some aspects of it, so people understand what it means in terms of, you know, some of these vocational qualifications and the opportunities that we potentially have lost.
So I always talk about the fact that when I was at school, I wasn't academically bright. That's just the way I describe it, which is why I did the vocational pathway and the BTEC. So when the government announced, or the education minister announced, that they were removing BTECs, I was up in arms about it. And so I signed the petition and I was very vocal about it, because we have to be able to offer an education system that plays to everybody's strengths. So I know they talked about T-levels. They've talked about T-levels coming in, and now they've just changed that to combining it with A-levels and having a totally different pathway. But that's fine, again, if you are more technical or academically minded. But the BTECs really are that vocation and allow you to learn on the job. And I wouldn't have gotten where I am today without that base BTEC foundation being put in place for me. So I would request, if it's possible, that BTECs aren't removed. or give them a reconsideration.
Okay, straight there. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of some of the, again, you know, I had to go through my notes and so forth, because there's so many things you've been involved with, so many change that you've initiated and been part of. And you've spoken about entry requirements for people getting into apprenticeships, entry requirements for people to get into different qualifications. You spoke about possibly, again, not spoke about, you've actually initiated the apprenticeship offer that Coca-Cola has, CCEP has, you know, which was predominantly, I would say, males and engineering and sort of those sort of qualifications. So there's change within the organization that you've been involved with. So talk to us about some of these initiatives and just bring us up to date if you can, please.
I think the biggest thing for us is if you want to widen participation, you have to remove a lot of the barriers. So one of the very first barriers was about this requirement for grades to be able to undertake an apprenticeship. By its very nature, an apprenticeship is a learning on the job. So why would I want to put a barrier of grades? So that was one of the very first things that we removed, was this, especially around level 2 and 3 apprenticeships, a requirement for grades. And also within that, we looked at the partnerships that we were going to run our apprenticeships with. And in particular, when we moved to the degree apprenticeships, so the level 6 apprenticeships, we wanted to work with university partners that had non-standard entries in. So if somebody missed the UCAS points by just a small margin, we needed to have an alternative way for them to be able to get on program. And that's really, really helped us in terms of attracting and having a larger pool of candidates that we are able to interview and review and create opportunities for. And I think that that is really, really important. Now, I know not every profession is going to be able to do that, but where you can, you should really be seizing that opportunity. And I think one of the other things that we've done, which isn't radical, it isn't new anymore, is this need for enhanced CVs and telling chapter and verse about your career. Well, fine, I've had 31 years, but the person coming out of school may not have even had the opportunity to have any work experience. So, you know what? We have to have a level playing field. So, no CVs.
So, no CVs. So, yeah. So, has that made a difference, do you think? Do you think, you know, people are giving feedback in terms of that's made it easier? Because if somebody's got the network or the contacts, or they, you know, they've got things to talk about their CVs. Otherwise, you know, it's quite plain, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Just education and so forth. What else? Yeah. What else?
And you're not comparing like for like because you may not have had those opportunities. And I think it has worked. We run an application masterclass and we talk about what's the expectation from an employer. And one of the things I say is, you know, for us as an employer, we don't need a CV. But if you did have to do a CV, these are the sorts of things that you should be putting on it. And it should be more about the skills and what you're passionate about. And that opening paragraph that talks about you and brings you to life, as opposed to, I've had no work experience. Then sell yourself in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it, and again, I know you spoke about this as well. There's a lot of unconscious bias as well in the whole recruitment process, and you want to create a sort of a little bit of a level playing field as within that, and part of that is the CVs, but part of that is also possibly unconscious bias training and getting people who are leading on the recruitment side to be a little bit more aware of some of these challenges and so forth, and being more empathetic and so
absolutely.
Forth.
My managers, when we were going through the hiring process, were in a state of shock when they said, "Where's my pack so I can see who the candidates are?" And I said, "Your pack is the sheets that you need to ask the questions from, and here are the names of the people you're seeing. That's your pack. You get no CVs. Because you should be having a two-way discussion with them. It shouldn't be about you just drilling them based on a piece of paper that's in front of you."
Was that well received? Or was
it's become the norm now, so they're used to it.
Yeah, it is. People are moving towards that sort of direction of travel. And again, I would say, you know, not everybody's there, but you know, I think there's been a bit of a shift and so forth. Yeah. So again, you know, that's another thing you've sort of pioneered on and so forth. And in terms of the offer, the apprenticeship offer, you know, engineering and so forth, has that sort of tilted a little bit, or has that changed a little bit, and you've got a lot more sort of offer there?
Yeah, so we typically have more pathways. So if I roll the clock back to 2014, gosh, 10 years ago, it was engineering. And that was pretty much it. Fast forward now, and we are engineering, again, still at the heart, our sales through technology is another big one for us because, you know, from a microbiologist perspective, we need to know that our products are as they should be. We also have project manager, data analyst. We've just opened up the door and the pathways that people can join us from an early careers. But I think the other thing that's really important is I always then say to the apprentices, you will need to carry on studying and learning, but give yourself 12 months off and then I'll be back to go, and what else do you want to study and learn? Because it should be about that lifelong learning and they shouldn't just limit themselves to, well, I've done a level 3 in. I want them to do more.
Cheryl, there's no doubt that you've made a massive, massive impact within CCEP, an even bigger impact, I would say, outside the sector in terms of the FE sector and also outside that as well in terms of the industry itself, generally industry as well. If somebody came knocking on the door and said to yourself, Sharon, is there an opportunity for a potential fourth career in CCEP, what would that be? Or where is your mind at the moment in terms of future aspirations and so forth?
So, it is there. Yeah. It's been ticking away. So one of the things that has been a focus from our CEO, global CEO, we had a lunch with the board a couple of years ago. Yeah. And he said, I see pockets of greatness going on in the organization around early careers.
Yes.
But I would really like one strategy and one approach. I'm sure you can know where that's going. So if that was that fourth career,
yeah,
it would still be doing what I'm doing, but on a global stage.
Okay.
And owning the whole global agenda for early careers.
Okay, fantastic. We have Brexit, though. We've had Brexit. We've had the challenges. It's the world was a one world. People used to say it's a small world out there, but now you've got all these trenches and all the rest of it. And it's no longer easier to hop over and so forth. Has that been a bit of a challenge as well in terms of?
Well, I think it would have been a challenge if we hadn't have had the pandemic.
Okay.
But what we've gotten used to is doing a lot more virtual and not necessarily as in person. So, because we've got the Pacific side, I talk to my colleague in Australia. We used to have an 8 a.m. call in the morning. It's now 7 a.m. every other month, just so she can find out what's going on from an early careers perspective. It's possible. You just have to have that flexibility. You don't always have to hop on a plane. And yes, with Brexit, visa requirements, which I believe come in this year, similar to an ESTA, you're just going to have to try and navigate what does that look like from a working perspective. So no, we haven't made life any easier for ourselves.
No, absolutely. So just in terms of sort of trying to bring this to a close, and we've had a lovely, lovely conversation, and it's been really interesting to delve a little bit deeper into the person behind the brand, Sharon Byfield OBE, but really the person, and I've seen a different side to you today, and I'm really, really grateful for that. But a little bit in terms of future sort of vision, yes, fourth career, we've touched on, you know, absolutely, you know, you'd be brilliant in terms of global agenda. You know, you talk the language, the global language, you understand it, and you talk from the heart, you know, you understand the landscape and you're a natural fit for that. But what are the sort of, you know, the big things that CCEP are talking about? What are the next sort of things that you want to get your teeth into and say, yeah, this is something that I want to really impact and change? And, you know, so what does 2024 look like?
So I always talk about the fact that I'm not technical, but one of the things coming in 2024 for CCEP in the role that I do, based on what I see what the organization is doing, is a lot around the sustainability and environmental impact. So how do I then build my knowledge to be able to support the business for its future skills capability? But the big one that I'm really excited about is AI. Okay. And everybody talks about AI.
Okay, good.
But mine is more from a robotic and automation and working in virtual environments. I'm absolutely fascinated by that. And there is teams working on this from a what's that future skills capability. Like, I want to then be able to say from an early careers this is how we can support the business and go out there and find those young people who can come in and actually be the ones to drive the agenda. Okay. That's what I'm excited about.
So if I was back in the day, many, many years ago, 16, and you were my careers advisor, what would you say to me, Sharon? What would you say? What words of encouragement would you give a young person today?
Words of encouragement would be, don't be afraid to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Don't tie yourself down to one pathway. You might start off say, this is what I'm going to do, and then you suddenly find something else. There's nothing wrong with changing the pathway. Yeah. We talk very much about squiggly line careers. Go find your squiggly line. Do lots and lots of things until you find the thing that really makes you want to get up in the morning.
So a bit of, if you can, give us some words of encouragement. And we desperately need it. We desperately need it in our sector because, you know, we sometimes talk ourselves down or we're feeling sorry for ourselves and so forth. So the skills sector, the education sector, I mean, there's a lot of stuff we're doing right, but we just seem to focus on some of the issues and the challenges. Any sort of advice for us?
I would say talk to industry. Make sure that they are your partners in terms of everything that you're looking to do. Remember, you hold the future generation in the palm of your hands. You are the influencers of those generations that are coming through who will replace all of us. Make sure you always remember that. And I think then if we work in partnership, we remember the audience that this is really aimed at, we'll do a great job.
I really appreciate that, Cheryl. I mean, You've been a big ambassador, big supporter of the cause per se. You know, thank you for your support with the Multicultural Apprenticeship Alliance. You know, thank you for your support throughout in terms of the work that we've been doing. You've encouraged us, you've directed us, you've sort of counseled us, and you've had those stern words at times as well, which has been a massive, massive benefit to us and also the work that we do. And, you know, you're inspirational as always, and it's been a delight to meet you today in terms of in this guise and also the support that you've given us, Sharon. So I'll let you, if I may, just to have the last words and anything you wish to say.
Thank you, Saf. No, I've really enjoyed our conversation. And as I look back on our partnership over, 7 years now, it's been a long time. And that partnership has gone from strength to strength, and more so in the last 12, 18 months. I can see a really clear direction. And I am just excited to see what else the Multicultural Alliance, Apprenticeship Alliance, is going to be bringing in 2024.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you for time. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Sharon Blyfield, OBE, Head of Early Careers at Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners Limited, for her insight and time. Next week, Safraz will be in conversation with Jill Whittaker, the Executive Chair at HIT Training Limited. So if you don't want to miss that, then remember to subscribe or follow us. If you're new to the podcast, let me tell you, there are already 83 other Canny Conversations podcast episodes out there. And you can listen to all those past episodes by searching for Canny Conversations on your preferred podcast platform. Or go to 1386audio.com/have-a-listen. We'd also love it if you could review, subscribe, or follow the podcast. And please tell your friends and colleagues about us. If you'd like to know more, then go to cannyconversationspodcast.co.uk or go to Safraz's website. That's safraz.co.uk. Safraz has also written a series of easy-to-follow business books, Canny Bites, and these are available from cannybites.co.uk/buy-the-book. As I said, we'll be back next week where you'll be able to hear the first half of Saf's conversation with Jill Whittaker, the Executive Chair at HIT Training Limited. So until then, we hope you have a good week.
This is a 1386 audio production.